CAH Pulse is developed by CARES Foundation to educate and connect the CAH community. Since our guests aren't scripted and are free to speak their minds, their views and opinions do not necessarily reflect the views and policy of CARES Foundation. Now, we hope you enjoy the podcast, made possible by Neurocrine Biosciences. You deserve brave science.
Hello and welcome to CAH Pulse, produced by the CARES Foundation. I'm Stephanie Erb. I'm an actress and a mother of a child with CAH. And joining me as always is Dina Matos, Executive Director of the CARES Foundation. Hey, Dina.
Hey, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm okay. Having a weird day, but you know, sometimes it's like that. How's your day going?
Yeah. Actually, you know, I just talked to an adult with CAH who said, thank you so much for the podcast, because she was at a family reunion and she played the podcast to them to explain what CAH was. And she says, even my sister said, oh, I knew you had something, but I didn't know what it was. She was like, this was a perfect opportunity to educate them without having to use my own words. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I thought that was great. I mean, that's why we're here.
And hopefully it's somewhat entertaining.
Right. Really rewarding.
Yeah. I think because our whole mission here is to illuminate the journeys of people who have CAH and their caregivers, what they go through, and their loved ones can also learn stuff from us, we hope. And you know, it's to give hope about living with this condition.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's journey is different. You know, everyone sharing their stories is so important because there are people out there who can definitely relate to the different experiences.
And our guests today are the parents of a child with salt wasting CAH, David and Brianne. How are you guys doing?
Good.
We're doing good. Thank you.
Great. Well, we're so happy you agreed to share your journey with us. You've had a tough journey. The early days were really difficult. And, you know, just for everyone's information, their daughter was born during COVID.
Oh, wow.
So that brought, you know, an extra set of challenges. So who wants to go first?
I guess I can go. So we got pregnant in January of 2020. During COVID, and mid-March, we all know that that's when the country shut down. And it was the day after all of that happened that I had my first ultrasound appointment. So I went in by myself. They wouldn't allow my husband to go with me. And one of the nurses that was in there looking at the screen as she was doing the ultrasound, she just mentioned that casually, like, oh, there's fluid behind the baby's spine.
Oh, no.
And then walked out of the room and left me there for like 20 minutes.
That's horrible.
It was awful. Like,
and you're by yourself.
And then I'm by myself and I'm talking on the phone to him and he wants to know if he should go up there. And then the nurse comes back in and says, let me get the OB on the iPad so we could FaceTime him because he needs to talk to you.
Oh, wow. That's not what you want to hear.
Boy.
No. And then she leaves me in the room again. So it's like, okay.
So what's going through your mind when you're sitting in that room alone?
I don't even know. Like, I kind of go into work mode. I'm not panicking. I'm just like, okay, what do they need to tell me? I need to ask questions. I need to get the information that they're telling me. I kind of just go into that mode. So they just end up telling me there's fluid behind the baby's spine and we need to make an appointment with a geneticist. So we get a phone call from the geneticist and it was a very hard phone call. I mean, they were going over the possibilities that could be wrong, like what the different spectrums are with Down syndrome and what it could be. And
this is your first child?
This is our second.
Second child.
So we kind of knew what to expect with a normal pregnancy, but this was very much not so. It was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. They couldn't be conclusive. They needed a blood test to find out what it was and if the baby had Down syndrome or not. And we ended up doing the blood test and it came back like a week or two later.
What were those 2 weeks like? Waiting?
Horrible. It was on top of just being isolated from the world because of COVID. We were completely alone. One of the things that the geneticist said was that it's possible that the baby wouldn't make it. And so that was another thing we were waiting on with the test. Found out baby wasn't going to have Down syndrome and found out the baby would be okay. Then that's when we found out we were having a girl. Second trimester came along and the fluid behind her spine went back into a normal range. But then they found something wrong with her kidneys. They just mentioned we might have to have surgery. We might not. We just have to see how baby develops and wait till baby is delivered. And so it was always like the limbo, the up and down. We didn't know what was happening through the whole pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then in the third trimester, I went in for one of my last ultrasounds. And the ultrasound tech asked me if I knew what we were having. And I said, yes, we're having a girl. And I made like a passive joke. I was like, unless you guys got it wrong and we're having a boy, because that happens sometimes. And she's looking and she's looking, and all of a sudden she just goes, huh? And I was like, what? And she just goes, let me get another ultrasound tech in here. Leaves me, comes back with another ultrasound tech.
And this whole time you're alone, David's not there because he's not allowed.
Yeah, he's not allowed to come in. So I go to all these appointments by myself and I'm just bombarded with information.
That's horrible. Now, Brianne, let me ask you, were you like Googling stuff like crazy in the interim while you're waiting, or did you try to stay off that?
That was David.
Okay.
He was going down the rabbit holes and I was just like, right. I'm not going to do that. I'll go crazy.
Yeah. I know Dr. Google is not supposed to be a good thing to do, but if you have information, right, and you aren't being told anything that's definitive, of course you want to go figure out something online. Yeah.
And I left that up to him and he would relay some information to me. And
so then the other tech came in?
So then the other tech came in and she did the same thing. She's looking, and she goes, huh? I'm like, why is everybody hawing? Like, this is not comforting to me.
Right.
And then they leave and they get the OB on FaceTime and he's talking to me. An ambiguous genitalia possibility. And I don't know what that means whatsoever. And it was just...
It's interesting that you had a geneticist, but the CAH did not pop up in those tests.
No, and I think it might have been a specific test that it was just they were looking for.
For one thing.
Like chromosomes, and not anything else. That was kind of hard in that ultrasound visit because I didn't know what to ask.
Right.
He just kind of threw it out there and that was the end of the appointment. And I had to relay information to David and he would ask me questions. Wow. And I'm like, well, I'm already out of the appointment. I can't.
So when the OB told you about the atypical or ambiguous genitalia, he didn't say it could be caused by XYZ?
No, he didn't. He didn't elaborate really on anything. He kind of just threw it out there and told me a little bit, not enough for me to even understand what he was saying, let alone grasp what he was saying, but very downplayed.
Right.
And then I got a random phone call from the hospital we were with. They just said, you need to make an appointment with a geneticist.
Again.
No explanation as to why.
I asked why and they said they couldn't tell me. And I didn't understand that because I'm the patient and they couldn't tell me why I needed an appointment with a geneticist.
Right.
And so David asked me who was that and I tell him, he's like, they can't call you and tell you that you need an appointment with a geneticist and not give you a reason why. And it was kind of out of the blue and it was on our other daughter's birthday. Like we went out and we got
so much
donuts
fun.
And we're about to do breakfast and we get this phone call.
They ruined the donuts.
They ruined it. Yes.
So that was rough, but I find out that the person that I'm speaking with is maybe some type of assistant in the office and they couldn't tell us anything. And after basically pleading with them and trying to explain to them, I find out that she's working from home.
Right.
Then I find out her boss is working from home. And then we find out that pretty much everybody that we need to talk to is working from home.
Wow. So they're not communicating with each other.
We spoke with the geneticist who can't really blame, but you know, when she came on, she just kind of told us what we were dealing with. And when she said what it was.
Mm-hmm. But you were dealing with the CH.
Yeah. Not only have I never heard of it, I couldn't say it. I couldn't spell it. I was more of just trying to understand.
So neither of you had it in your families anywhere?
No.
Okay.
No.
That happens a lot more than you would think.
Yeah. So the geneticist who actually was the same one that we dealt with the months before, she just ripped the Band-Aid off, which I appreciated, and just kind of told us. But then as that was going on, we didn't realize there was like this massive spectrum within the diagnosis she was trying to explain. That's when your brain is wandering and you start going on to Google and we try to figure out what is going on. And we all know how that can go. And I knew at that moment that this is when, you know, our child was going to be born with something. Nobody wants to be certain. Well, it could be just, you know, essentially nothing to where nobody knows, or it could be this ambiguous genitalia, salt wasting to where medication and she can potentially be at risk for her whole life. And you're just trying to understand that.
And you are about to have a baby at this point.
Yeah, yes. We're about 2 weeks out. Yeah. And this is when I basically put my foot down with, you're not keeping me out of the hospital anymore. Brianne had one more appointment and I said, I'm going with you. And she said, they won't let you in. And I said, well, I'm going to get in. So I called and spoke to your OB, and he ultimately said that he would sneak me in. So that's essentially what he did. Basically, my wife went in first. I waited. I got called. I went in, and then pretty apparent that I wasn't supposed to be there.
Well, I think we also have to remember people were dying of COVID all over the place. So everyone is frightened. So I'm sure there was an undercurrent of fear everywhere. And I can't imagine what that was like for you guys.
Right. And I think this was obviously towards the end of September, beginning of October, which now is the peak of COVID, yep, at least here in the United States. Luckily, I went in there, basically explained to him that I just wanted to be educated, and he really started to break down what it was. I think he was trying to help, but I think he also kind of made it worse for me. He says, have you ever heard of a hermaphrodite?
Oh my God. Oof.
And I said, yes.
Oh my God, how ignorant.
And he says, I just want to make sure that you understand what we're dealing with here is obviously modern medicine. There's things to correct. But way back when, 100 plus years ago, when they weren't doing these corrective surgeries, this is what a hermaphrodite would be considered. And I was like, that was the last thing on my mind. And I will say that he actually did appear that he cared and was trying. I think he just figured that I was struggling understanding. So during that appointment, as that's going on and we're being told that, he tells us that this is a large scale hospital. And he says, I will not deliver your child or your baby unless I'm here. If not, the midwife will do it. We spoke to him about, hey, is all this going to be relayed? I mean, you're telling us this is extremely rare. Like, is the midwife going to know? Are the nurses going to know? Do we need to do anything specific? Because we're getting close to her due date where she was probably going to have to be induced. And he was like, yes, all the notes will be transferred over. Everybody knows. I communicate with the midwife. Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. And then it was a planned induction, and we go in, and our first daughter was induced, very familiar with the process. We talked to the nurse that was there the entirety of the induction and the birth, and she seemed very calm and assuring. And then the actual, you know, birthing process truly began. And I think that's where it really took a turn for the worse for us.
Yeah. Oh, no. So they had not communicated?
It was almost like a false communication. So then they were reassuring us, you will still be able to bond with the baby and have skin to skin. So will dad. Dad will be able to cut the umbilical cord. And none of that happened. And in fact, it was more so like, as I was getting ready to deliver, we threw out like, you do have on record like that certain tests need to be ordered for the baby. And they're just like, no.
So they didn't have any records. They
didn't even actually
have. Oh my God. And this is a large metropolitan hospital?
Yes.
Wow.
Then we had to try and like troubleshoot, like, what were these tests called? What was it for?
And then we,
chaos.
Do you guys recall during that time where they would say everything's delayed because the labs are shut down for COVID testing? And again, whether it was true or not, because as time has progressed, we're learning that a lot of these tests are done on site, very streamlined, that the staff there does it. And they made it sound like they ship things down to a lab and test it there. But because everybody was home and shut down, everything was delayed. So,
well, if they already knew that she had CH, they should have had an endocrinologist on site to, you know, start ordering the medications.
So basically, this hospital seemed to have very little knowledge of CAH, which we're finding is the truth of lots of hospitals, and also didn't communicate any of the baby's needs to the people who would actually be there with you. So then what happened?
So with COVID, in delivery rooms, in hospital rooms, they try to have as minimal people in a confined space as possible. And I'm pushing, and all of a sudden we just have a lot of nurses in our room, like more than normal outside of COVID. It was kind of odd, but that was not my concern because I was trying to get baby out. But I was just like, there's a lot of nurses in here. And so baby was born, didn't even show her to me, took her like to the other side of the room to where I could no longer see her. So all of the things that were promised of what we were able to do didn't happen.
Okay. Was she in any distress?
Yeah. So with my first daughter, it was surreal in the sense of being your first and going through that whole shock and awe. And then you quickly come down to like this euphoric feeling. This was the opposite. The nurses are now not calm. Okay. There's obviously something wrong. Well, they take her out of the room and they're headed toward the NICU. So I go to follow and they stop me. Wait, hold on. COVID protocol. We need you to change your clothes, leave your phone. And I'm like, okay, like, because now we're separated. And they put me in this side, like, they called it a quarantine room, but I'm pretty sure it was a janitor's closet. They just hand me some scrubs and, you know, you just do what you got to do. So you change out. And I remember they had me wash my hands for 5 minutes. So you're just doing what you have to do. So now I have none of my belongings. I get shuttled up there. My wife and I are now separated. I go into the NICU, and as soon as I get in there, I can see them working on our daughter, and she's flatlining, but they did stabilize her pretty quickly. And during this whole time, now my wife is trying to find me, and somehow, I don't know why, I left the NICU to go into the hallway, and I heard my wife basically screaming, "Where are you?" Which was very odd to me because we were on a different floor.
Like on the phone. I think you heard your phone.
Oh, I see.
When you walked out of the NICU. Oh, my God. Oh, it was so much chaos. Like I had nurses come up to me after he left. Like, are you sure you had a girl?
Oh, my God.
He's gone. I'm emotional. Just, I delivered a baby. I didn't get to see my baby. They left me. And then they wheel me back to my new room. And they're just checking me in like nothing's happened. You just delivered a baby. Okay, what's your name? What's your birthday? What's your address? Are you allergic to anything? Oh, and I'm trying to hold it together and answer these questions. And I'm bursting emotionally. Like I can't. And I keep having to look away from the nurse. And then finally I asked, when am I going to be able to go see my baby? Oh, sweetie, you already got to see your baby. You'll be able to see your baby when you can walk.
Oh, my God.
And that's when I just started to lose it. I called David, and this must have been when he walked out of the NICU. He might have heard his phone, something, and he picked up, but I was screaming. I was crying. I was like, get me out of here. Kidnap me. I don't care what you have to do. I want to see my daughter.
Right.
Because they wouldn't let me.
Well, it sounds like chaos was reigning.
Yes. And I remember him coming into my room with a wheelchair, and he was putting me in the wheelchair, and a nurse came in and said, what are you doing? And I was like, I need to see my daughter. I haven't seen her. And they kind of didn't know what to do, and they just let me go.
Oh, my gosh.
So we ultimately end up back in the NICU, which is where we spent a week, and nothing really seemed to go our way. Right on the onset is dealing with all this is when we're basically told that we can't name our baby.
Oh, my God.
Which, looking back, it's like, how crazy is that, right? Like, yeah, the name we had, they felt was a female name, and they basically said, hey, we don't know what your baby is.
It's like a Twilight Zone hospital.
Yes. Right. You know, we're told that, and mind you, neither one of us are in a state to really argue that. I know that sounds probably crazy. I think most parents are probably listening and saying like, wait, how did you not get past that, you know, right then and there? And it's like, I guess I was probably in shock, and you're just trying to fight through all of this. But that continued on to where you have rotating doctors every 12 hours. You have staff changing every 12 hours. And we were getting different opinions every 12 hours. So every doctor had a variation of something different.
Whoa.
Why did they say you couldn't name her?
So they wouldn't even refer to her as a her. We had blood work done showing that she was XX, and they said that that was not conclusive enough. They referred to her as it.
Oh my God.
This is very Middle Ages.
Yes.
They referred to her as him, and we would have to correct them over and over and over again.
This is crazy. These stories are nuts. I just want to take a moment, by the way, Dina, the hermaphrodite thing. Would you like to explain why that is so wrong, just for the listening audience?
Well, because these babies, anatomically, they are females. I mean, they have all of the female internal organs.
And they are also chromosomally females. They are XX.
Absolutely.
A hermaphrodite is XXY or some.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's why I said they were ignorant, because that's not what they were dealing with.
And so they're not letting them name their baby because of this weird idea they have.
That is the craziest story.
Believe it or not, that didn't resolve until almost we got discharged, and that was a fight. Majority of the nurses were really good. The nurses just seemed to care quite a bit more than the doctors, which I think is pretty common. There was a few that really wanted to help, and I'll never forget this. And I told Dina this. I got contacted by an organization that is not anything like CARES. And actually their views are quite the opposite. Basically were telling me things I didn't even know yet.
So let me ask you, who told you you couldn't name her? Was it a doctor or a nurse,
yes,
a social worker? It was a doctor.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. None of the doctors really told us directly their opinions, but man, they sure were pushing a lot of like, let your child decide what they want to be, even the name. And we're like, wait a minute. Oh,
they were refusing for her to be female on her birth certificate and for her name to even appear on her birth certificate.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. I would have lost my mind.
The child I adopted, they would not put a pink or a blue hat on my child who was XX. They had a white hat they found.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is so ignorant of the hospital. I cannot believe you were put through that. And during COVID, that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. How did that resolve? How did you finally name her?
Eventually we found CARES. I guess to go back, this organization contacted me. They started bringing up things that I wasn't even thinking about. You know, and then
hold on. So
how did they get your information? Do you know?
Obviously someone at the hospital gave personal information, medical information to an outside organization. So someone had an agenda, apparently.
It had to have been somebody on the staff. So this person,
that's where the lawsuit is, I think.
Sure. Of course. Right. Yeah. So they call, yep, don't do the surgery. It's very painful. You know, let your child be what it wants to be and all these things. And then I knew at that moment something was wrong. There was one particular nurse that I really got along with, and I went back to her and I just said, there's got to be something to help us with this diagnosis. Because by this time we did know she had CAH. You know, this particular nurse said, you know what, my recommendation to you is a couple things. And I shared this with my wife at the time. She said, I need you to mourn the death of the child you thought you were going to have. And I need you to get strong, and I need you to block everything else out and basically let your intuition of a father kick in. And she handed me the information of CARES.
Yay.
All right. Now it's making me cry, because every time I hear these stories, I want to cry.
Yeah. Were they teaching you at all about the steroids? I mean, it seems like this whole boy-girl thing was taking precedence over what she really needs, which is medication and understanding of what CAH does to the adrenal glands.
Right. I mean, they should have been worried about her condition, her health.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they were still waiting for test results to come back. We were there an entirety of 6 days.
Yeah, but they knew from the genetic testing that she had CAH. They should have started treating her immediately. I mean, they should have had an endocrinologist.
Yeah, but for them, they were waiting for the test results to start doing all of this for her.
So they were worried about her gender and how you were going to name her, but not about her
keeping her alive.
The possibility that she could die if she didn't get care.
Correct. And there was actually a moment when we weren't there that she started projectile throwing up. and they did an ultrasound on her to see like what was wrong.
She had CAH. Oh my God. She wasn't being treated.
She had CAH. They knew. And this is another really important thing that they continued to deny when it came to her being a girl. In the ultrasound, it shows her uterus on top of them already knowing that right. she has XX chromosomes. And we're still battling this with them. Finally, we got the results back. Then they started bringing out her medications. And they gave her one dose and they're like, okay, let's discharge you. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you need to monitor her for 24 hours to make sure, one, she's not allergic to this. Two, she's on the right dose. She's not, it's not too little. It's not too much.
So, Brianne, did they like educate you on how to take care of her at home? Like,
no, they would tell us things and act like they were experts in this and tell us information and then hand us a printout from Google that they just looked up, memorized the first paragraph to what was on there and handed it to us. Some of the doctors would tell us they have a lot of patients that have this. All their patients get to choose what their gender is later on. And then we ask, how many patients do you have? And this doctor goes, one.
Oh my God. That's so
you have one crazy. Patient and you're an expert in this.
And it was probably you guys.
Yeah. It was like just chaos.
It was.
And this is giving me anxiety right now.
And they finally let us put her nameplate up. All the other babies had their nameplates. We would get comments from the staff. Like even when they were trying to discharge us after only one dose of her medication, they said to us, you need to not be afraid to take care of your daughter and you need to take her home. We have other patients in the NICU that have serious problems.
Well, you need to acknowledge she has a serious medical condition. You need to teach us how to take care of her. I mean, that's what they should have been saying.
So crazy.
No, they didn't. And so reluctantly, they monitored her for 24 hours on the medication and they went to discharge us. And
so to go back a little bit, it was CARES that got me on track because I spoke to a woman. She had two sons and they had
Sue. Yeah.
Yep. Her story different. She didn't know they were diagnosed for quite some time. I think a few years. Nonetheless, she really helped me understand what it was. And I talked to her probably about an hour, and this was probably day three or four. So within an hour of talking to her, it all made sense. That's all I needed. And she went deep into what we're all discussing, the actual reality of what we should be concerned with versus all this other stuff. So that's when I realized she explained that one of her sons had passed away and that it was a deadly diagnosis if you don't take care of it. Okay, we need to make sure she's properly medicated and we need to take care of her. I mean, CARES from the start really is what helped me and my wife get back on track.
You know, David, I have like so many stories embedded in my memory of like some of the crazy cases like yours and nothing like what you dealt with. And I will never forget that conversation with you.
Yeah. No, yeah. And I appreciate it. And I always say that everybody, what they're dealing with is relative, because if that's the toughest thing that they've ever dealt with, that's the toughest thing they've ever dealt with. You know, in our situation, our daughter was born with is it Prader or Prader?
Prader.
On the scale.
Prader, Prader.
Both. Yeah.
You know what? I think it's both.
So the Prader score is, you know, from 1 to 5. At a Prader score of 5, the child externally can look completely male. It is the degree of what they call virilization that the child has. So at 1, it's very minimal.
Yeah. So this, the Prader Prader scale, she was a 4, which is very pronounced.
So what happens in utero, because the tissues are being bathed in testosterone, what happens right. is the female tissues start to change. Just because of the soup of testosterone they're in. So they start looking more male, but they're actually female tissues that are just distorted right. by the chemical imbalance happening. And if you don't excess. Correct the chemical yeah. imbalance for the child outside of the uterus, the child will die. But it right. can't be right. maintained outside of the body of the mother. And that's another reason why it is not hermaphroditism or anything like that. It is a girl who just has an yeah. external appearance right. shift from chemicals. I feel like there are organizations who don't understand that at all.
They completely ignore the medical part and the seriousness of it.
Yeah.
So David and Brianne, I want you to be able to share what's happened since then. How old is she now?
3.5.
3.5.
Aw.
So
that's a fun age.
Being at this stage now, what advice do you have for other parents?
I think for the fathers, just realize that there's challenges that you have to deal with, because I feel like with little girls specifically, especially if they're higher on that scale, that psychologically it's a lot to overcome. You know, you're not alone. Be strong. There's plenty of fathers out there that can talk to you.
Have you made the surgery decision? Have you been working on that mentally or emotionally? Or
she's already had one. Mm-hmm. That's a different story, but it went okay. We were actually in conversation of having a follow-up one, but yeah, she's already had one, which was challenging because she was in like...
Oh, the mermaid pants.
The mermaid pants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
That's hard.
Yeah. And of course, she just learned to start crawling mm-hmm. at that time. So
that's... And our daughter's one that you cannot stop what she wants to do. The doctor would tell us like, oh, she won't start crawling or anything for a couple of weeks. She won't want to. Our daughter was crawling out of the hospital crib the day after her surgery.
Wow.
You know, I've seen that in a lot of CH kids. There was another child who had surgery and she was a little bit older when she had surgery. It's usually done when they're younger because, you know, they're not moving around as much. A week after surgery, her mother sent me a video and she's like walking in their living room. And I'm like, how is this kid walking? Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I think a lot of CH kids are very strong little creatures.
Very smart.
Are you feeling good about her care at this point?
So much more now. I mean, when the first time we brought her home, it was really hard. We were under the care of not the specialists we have now, and they were having me dose her 8 times around the clock.
Oh my God.
So I would have to wake her up in between her feedings if the alarm went off. I was so tired. I can't even begin to explain to you how hard that was. And then when we finally were able to go to CHLA, the endocrinologist said, you don't need to do that. We'll get her on a schedule of dosing her 4 times and you can sleep during the night if baby lets you. So
that must have felt like a miracle. It must have felt like a miracle.
Oh my gosh. That was such a relief. I had 2.5 to 3 months of dosing her around the clock 8 times a day. We finally got to speak to a physician who knew what they were talking about.
That's why it's so important to go to an expert who knows what they're doing.
Yep. Yes, because I mean, this endocrinologist before, he was doing the best that he could, but I didn't have contact information to contact him directly if I had questions, if something came up. And so I could never get in contact with him. He couldn't explain to us very well what mm-hmm. she had. And then going over to CHLA, it was night and day. It was completely different.
I feel like it's such the responsibility of doctors to admit when they don't know enough about something.
Yes.
They want to just pretend they're the expert of everything, and they're hurting their patients by doing so. And I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, well, that goes back to when she was in the NICU. We saw one of the doctors actually had a printout from the internet.
Absolutely right.
About it. Yeah. We're literally looking and you're just like, you already know he doesn't know what he's talking about.
That's crazy.
And this happens so much.
Yeah.
This is, I think, another reason this podcast is so amazing, because we're encouraging everybody to find your expert. It's so important.
And get a second opinion or a third opinion if you need it.
What it developed in us was we all of a sudden had mistrust in the medical field. Before, I just trusted them. It was, you're the expert. You know what you're talking about. You're going to find the answers. I could trust you. And in COVID, with her birth, listening to these men talk about something they had no idea what they were talking about, I second guess all the physicians I come in contact with now.
And so you should.
Yeah. Rightly so.
Yeah. I mean, your instincts as parents are so important in this whole process. That's what I've learned as a mom myself.
And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I have parents or adult patients saying, I'm educating my doctor, you know, the ones who don't have access to an expert, because they know more than these doctors do.
Sounds like your child is thriving. Do you feel that she is thriving now?
Yeah, she's doing awesome. We're at a point of trying to teach her which medication she takes at different times. And
when they get to be four, you can do the mini M&M's trick.
I didn't actually ever have to do that. Dina would tell me about it and stuff. My daughter started swallowing her pills whole at 11 months old.
That's great. You got to start early.
She sounds amazing.
It used to be with food. And then after a while, I was like, I can't feed you every hour of the day to get you take your meds. I just pop them in her mouth and she'll swallow the three at a time that she needs to swallow or whatever it is.
That's amazing. She's
awesome. And now it's just awesome. Like, I'm trying to tell her, okay, how many red ones do you take at night? And she'll tell me every now and then. I'll look at her thing. I'm like, did you take them all? She goes, yep. I didn't want to go to the hospital. I was like, you can't do that.
That's awesome.
Are you on cortisol and Florinef, I assume?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Stephanie, they share a doctor that your child has had.
Oh, he's the best. Yeah, the best. I mean, can we say his name?
You can, I guess.
Dr. Mitch Geffner is like, I consider him my child's godfather at this point.
Yes.
My child was being medicated completely incorrectly. And I ventured forth because of CARES and showed Dr. Geffner my kid's blood work, and he straightened everything out. It was amazing. So yeah. I'm happy for you guys because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I love his emails and how he breaks everything down. But one of the biggest things I appreciate about Dr. Geffner is when I email him, he never fails to email me back. It's like within a couple hours. And I've had one time he's like, oh, I'm in Europe. Sorry, it took me so long.
And it was probably, what, half a day?
No, it was an hour later. And I was like, oh, don't worry about that.
What I truly, truly hope is that he is training lots of young endos to become just like him.
Yeah, he's great.
He'll probably be creating a little cadre of smart endos who understand how to treat CAH properly.
I know.
Well, this has been an amazing story. I'm so glad you weathered the storm and that you found your way to Dr. Geffner and that your kid is doing so well.
Thank you. And then just to circle back, you know, for those parents out there, please don't hesitate to reach out to CARES. Dina, she can connect you with anybody. That's been a life-changing for us. And more importantly, it's been life-changing for our daughter. And that's what it's all about. So we greatly appreciate CARES. We couldn't imagine being without you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for not only giving me the correct and accurate information, but ultimately helping me make the best decisions for my daughter. Thank you.
And I just want to thank you both for sharing your story, because I'm sure this is going to resonate with others. I just admire your resilience, your courage, and not giving up on your child. This can be a movie, Stephanie.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Dina, that was an amazing tale. I swear, every time we do this, I'm blown away by the obstacles people have had to overcome and how they do it with grace and sort of using their intuition to get through this whole pathway that can be so treacherous. What a great visit with David and Brianne.
Again, we can't do this without our guests and their courage to share their journey, because it's going to help so many people. So thanks for joining me again, Stephanie.
I think that will help a lot of parents.
Absolutely.
We also want to thank our producer, Amy Brooks. CAH Pulse is sponsored by Neurocrine Biosciences. And for more information about CAH and to connect with us, please visit us at caresfoundation.org. If you like this podcast, please subscribe. We would love it. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Dina.
And we care. See you next time.